sahanau bhunaktu sahaviryankaravavahai tejasvinavadhitamastama vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay. Okay, so page 20, not that that means anything to anybody, but okay. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 28. When one is bereft of all possessions, he is certainly reduced in bodily luster. But although Balimarsh had lost everything, he was fixed in his determination to satisfy Vamanadeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita, such a person is called Stita Pragya. Footnote 7. O Partha, when a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind, thus purified, finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. One who is not disturbed in mind even amidst the threefold miseries, or elated when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear, and anger, is called a stage of steady mind. In the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may attain, neither praising it nor despising it, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. Bhagavad Gita 2:55-57. So the key here is when a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, right? Because the whole point is, as Prahlad Maharaj points out, that when as soon as there's material desire, then the misery begins, right? Because they go together. So when you give up that desire for sense gratification, that means it's not, we're looking at the technical point that we're giving up the sense gratification, but how can we actually give up sense gratification? Right? As Krishna points out, you can only give up a lower taste when there's a higher taste. So, therefore, if there's the material attachment, and that, giving that up, what do you have to replace that with? What kind of attachment? Right? It has to be higher. But it can't just be Brahman, because Brahman consciousness and only knowing Brahman without the Lord is still material. Right? So therefore, means we'll count them as transcendentalists because they'll get to that platform outside the material. So if we identify transcendental as not material, then they qualify. But technically they're not actually on the devotional platform, so they can't eternally stay there. So, therefore, the only thing is attachment to Krishna. So when it says giving up all varieties for sense gratification means we give up seeing things in relationship to ourselves and our enjoyment and see everything in relationship to Krishna and his enjoyment. So once you do that, you give up that, then we can see, and those, where do they come from? As you point out, mental concoction. Because we think, oh, this will make me happy. That didn't make me happy, but now this will make me happy. And we just go on and on and on. Right? So basically we have 8,400,000 major categories, and then within that, then we have still unlimited, then finer points. Does that make sense? Like that. So then the mind thus purified, right? Because the mind is contaminated because of the desire for sense gratification. Then he finds satisfaction in the self alone. So there's, of course, the Supreme Self, and then himself as servant of Krishna. So he finds satisfaction, I'm a servant of Krishna. Right? That actually makes it work for him. Then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. One who is not disturbed in mind even amidst the threefold miseries, or elated when there is happiness. So, why won't you be? Because you're just looking at the situation, how it'll work for Krishna. So whatever the situation is, then you'll take that situation and make it into something for Krishna. Why we suffer by the situation on the material platforms? Because of the mental concoction. Right? It's like this, but if it had been like that, then it would have been good. Or if only this had happened, then it would have been, you know. There's always, you know, what if, or, you know. Yes?
Sometimes we see when difficulty comes, it's a real struggle.
Yes.
But then when the good situation is coming, then it's kind of balance. So how can we adjust the second part? Means the first part.
My first part. How can we adjust all these nice situations? I mean, it's so trying. You know? Being happy all the time, you know, I mean, you know, it's putting pressure on my face. I'm going to get wrinkles. Thinking of that old, like, 50s cliche, you know, oh, darling, so difficult being happy all the time. Yeah, so the point comes down is that we're thinking, I could be happy. So when we are happy, things are okay, and then we'll take that as a beginning place to work from. But then the points that where we're not happy, then because being happy ourselves is our, you know, focus, then disturbing situations therefore will be an anxiety. Right? But when we give up the idea that it's about my happiness for Krishna, then we don't become disturbed in either of them. So that's why then the Vedas recommend, because that we're, how you say it? The Vedas, they're recommending a lifestyle and dealing with situations that are always favorable to Krishna. That's what the Vedas actually recommending. But because of our attachment to the mundane concept, therefore we can apply those, the situations applied to us for our duties. So then if we want to also share in that enjoyment, that's the place where we would do it. But we keep that connection to the Supreme. Right? How much we can. Minimum that at least he's the Supreme Lawmaker, and, you know, he's the Supreme Person, and so therefore it's his world, and therefore I follow his laws. That's the minimum standard of karma. You're considered human. Like that. So then, as we can give that up, as you know, as we perform devotional service, it means we'll do that, continue in piety, because doing piety for so long doesn't still give satisfaction, we'll go for liberation, then from that we'll go back to karma, then back to, like, we'll just go back and forth. But if we come in contact with the devotees, then we understand actually the higher position and how karma and jnana can't make us happy. But that doesn't mean that position is given up, because that's the recommendation. The idea is that if someone is doing their duties properly, according to the Varnashram system, the results of that, now that's first class offering to Krishna in the material world. Right? He's also in the spiritual world, but point is that's the first class offering. Right, something else is not. You know, it's not like we can sit there and be so happy that, yes, you know, that's amazing. I've never seen, you know, the meth come out so good, you know, in all these last 10 years, and so, you know, we gotta offer this to Krishna. You know, no, not like that. So what we're doing is we're dealing with devotional service. So that means what's the best form, what's recommended in the Vedas. Why? Because that's what pleases Krishna. We always look at Varnashram, it's restricting me, this and that. But why? Because then we can get the best for Krishna. But since best for Krishna isn't forefront in our mind in all situations, direct devotional service, yes. Right? But in indirect devotional service, we want it to be about ourselves. So therefore, you can take those situations and focus more on the secondary than the primary, and then we'll be happy. Right? So that's why then it's recommended that we follow the duties and do all that nicely, then at least materially we'll be situated in the nicest situation in which, like you said, we won't be disturbed. Because when we're satisfied, then the mind is balanced, right? So, but in here, it still has to be focused enough that it's not about us being elated.
Yeah.
It's just about us being comfortable, which means we're not uncomfortable. So we situate ourselves like that. And so then from there, it'll progress to the point where it gets where it's just about Krishna. Since we're doing our duties nicely, generally it'll always go nice, but there's always, because it's the material world, something will go wrong. But at that point, because it's still about Krishna, we won't be disturbed. Example is Bali Marsh here, or Yudhishthir Marsh. Right? Even if we look at it, the disturbance of, you know, Nakula Sahadev didn't say much, Arjuna generally never said much, only Draupadi and Bhima said. Draupadi's point was as, here's Yudhishthir, the most pious person, you know, most qualified. Why shouldn't he be on the throne? So it was about him, not so much her. And then Bhima was about, he's the most qualified. Why Duryodhana should be sitting there? You know, so like that. So even for them, it was about Yudhishthir, not about themselves, and about justice. So it's not that. The situation is not uncomfortable, but it says one is not disturbed in mind amidst the threefold miseries. So you won't be disturbed. It's not that that's his ideal situation. He can't tell the difference. He'd prefer to be in a different situation, but in that situation, he won't be disturbed. He can still be Krishna conscious. Does that make sense? But will be the most comfortable naturally in that situation that matches the nature, simply because then you can express devotional service through that nature more easily. Right? Because it's always going to be a combination between the subtle and gross. Right? So, therefore, if the consciousness is pure, then that expression of the subtle and gross comes very naturally. But if the situation isn't ideal, then the consciousness, and subtly you can be Krishna conscious, but you can't express it externally. So that's why it's not as ideal. But as far as being Krishna conscious, that won't change, even if the situation's not nice. Does that make sense? So that's the beauty of the Vedic system, is we look at it, okay, the gradual process, but that's us. The actual Vedic system is just about pleasing Krishna. Then we, according to our level of consciousness, then we can therefore connect ourselves and then progress through that up to the point of just being only about Krishna, up to pure unalloyed devotion. But we'll start at the lower end, but where it starts nicely, comfortably, is at Manamoya. When we accept the Varnashram system, because it's a theistic system, and we give up the attachments for the atheistic system of pranamoya or economic development, like that whole position, if that's adjusted, then life becomes easier. Because as soon as you cut Krishna off from it, because we can say, but that's not, you know, we're from the West, it's not natural. But the point is, if we say it's not natural, it's about us. Krishna's not part of the equation. Krishna's part of the equation when it comes to chanting japa, you know, being in the kirtan, hearing Bhagavatam, you know, generally in general associating with devotees, you know, and living in the dham. But other aspects, then it'll just be about us. Right? So that's not theistic. So that's why then minimum we accept the Varnashram system. So even if we're absorbed in it about ourselves, at least on the bottom line, the situations we're in are recognizing Krishna's authority. Even though we're not looking at his enjoyment. We're at least accepting his authority. Right? So that's why if one has authority issues, human life becomes very difficult. Means, another, basically, you can speaking, if you have authority issues, then you're wrestling with actually the concept of human life. Human life begins when we accept authority. Right? We may not accept all individuals as authority, but we accept the concept and the principle of authority. Right? Let's just like, okay, I respect the person because he's in the position of authority. Him personally, I may not respect, but I respect, you know, that he said this should be done. I'll do it because of that. I don't like him, but, yeah.
So, would it be right in saying that, just expanding the point further, we're thinking being undisturbed can sometimes be mixed with avoidance. So does that mean that we're actually not understanding the principle of duty because we're avoiding the situation so that we...
It depends. It's not necessarily that an uncomfortable situation is avoidance. It may be you're trying to do your duty and all that, but in the performance of the duty, then all kinds of things that aren't what you expect or want come up, and they get in the way of performance of that duty. It means the secondary. The whole point is the duty is simply a medium for expressing devotion to Krishna. So that means that aspect can never be stopped. But it's always nice that there's a form through which it can be expressed. But we see is that there is the aspect of why that comes. Now, in the material world, it's to bother us because we think we're the supreme. But actually, the whole point of energy adjusting like that is to bring out newness and freshness. Right? So that if there's something you want to do and you can't do it, then when you can do it, then you feel very happy. Right? So now if it's about pleasing Krishna, then when you get that opportunity, then you can even put more energy into it and more focus. Right? So it's meant to please Krishna. But since we're not Krishna, we have a different idea. You know, we want to be in control of things. And so when we're not, then it disturbs our concept that I'm the controller and enjoyer. So for us, it makes us miserable. But in the spiritual world, these things, it means even the unhappiness is connected to Krishna. So it just gives the different flavors. So between being with Krishna, not being with Krishna, being in an unimpeded and being in an impeded situation, all these things just add to the flavor of Krishna. Because the primary aspect of the relationship with the Lord, that cannot be checked under any circumstance. I think there was I can't remember where it was. It was in Malaysia, Indonesia, or someplace. I haven't heard of it now, but back in the, I think, 70s, 80s, it was. You would hear about some parents who were not satisfied with their children being devotees, then they would hire these deprogrammers, like that. So then one family had done such a thing and it wasn't working, and so then they put them into a mental asylum because they thought, you know, you must be crazy. And they gave all kinds of drugs, I think, that kind of clear the memory so that it could start over again. And it cleared out everything so that the person didn't know anything, but they were still chanting Hare Krishna. So I think the parents were not very satisfied with that, because now that's the basis. Yes. So the whole point is devotional service can't be stopped. But because we identify so much with the secondary, when the secondary gets impeded, our devotion gets impeded simply because of our identification with it. But as we develop, as it's pointed out here, given the example of Bali Maharaj, because that's why it says that generally one's bodily luster is reduced because of losing the material situation is not favorable. You lose your luster. But we see with Bali Maharaj, no, he's fixed in devotional service, therefore he's unaffected. So that's something that puts him more glorious than the demigods. Again, right, already more that he's willing to give in charity everything, even though he knows that you know, here's his enemy. So that's glorious. And then he's unaffected by it. So that's the next point. So does this work? Yeah. So then we see going on with that, free from attachment, right? Because we're attached to something for ourselves rather than for Krishna. So the attachment for Krishna. Fear, because our identity is servant of Krishna, and fear comes from identifying something other than Krishna and losing that identity. So servant of Krishna can never be lost, so there's no fear. Anger, because there's no frustration after that I didn't get what I want for myself. Now it's just for Krishna. If it didn't work, I'm more determined, more focused to get that result. And so therefore then he's a sage of steady mind. You understand? So that's the key, is that giving up the attachment to something for ourselves and seeing it in relationship to Krishna. So we're doing that in the beginning. Yes, the results for Krishna. But then we see is that we start there. But as we do that and get purified, then the action, we're thinking of Krishna. And then eventually, then it comes down to I'm not looking. The identity is connected to Krishna. Right? There has to be some intellectually identity connected to Krishna to just agree to give the result to Krishna. But it'll be on the platform of jnana. But by this practice, it'll come down until it becomes vigyan. And then that becomes just the standard way of doing it. So that's the Vedic system is so perfect, because it descends like that. It starts from there. You connect to Krishna, everything else will come. And so we see, we think, oh, how can I work on all these? No, the point is you work on this one, the others will come. But if you can't relate to that, okay, well, I'm trying to control my anger. Start anywhere. But you'll find that it comes the most natural when we give up all varieties of desire for sense gratification. When that's given up, then we see it's just for Krishna. It becomes positive, it becomes dynamic, and all the other. That's why it says all the good qualities naturally come to a devotee. You know, it doesn't have to separately endeavor, because all bad qualities come from thinking I'm the controller and enjoyer. As soon as you give that up, that I'm a servant of Krishna, there are no bad qualities. Right, so when you remove lack of light, there's light. Right, so all bad qualities go with devotional service. That means all the good qualities will manifest. It's not that he has to. That's why Prabhupada says you don't have to separately endeavor for them. Right, we're aware so that when we have an opportunity, we express it. So it's just more ways to connect something to Krishna. But in actuality, as soon as one's that fully surrendered, that comes to that pure devotion. All those good qualities come on their own. So, yeah.
So, Maharaj, like Bali, he's a great demon, you know.
Bali
Maharaj.
Yes, Bali, okay.
He's head of demon. So how can he suddenly attain such high level of civil?
Well, technically, Rahu is just a head. How can he attain this? Because he's the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. So he's already a devotee. Right? But as king of the demons, he's doing what is best for his citizens. So when the opportunity comes to actually surrender to the Lord personally, then he takes it. So then he goes from just being, you know, a devotee into being, you know, a very advanced devotee. Right?
So he was a devotee.
He was already a devotee. But it's not a prominent thing in the pastimes. Only at this point, then we actually appreciate and understand his position as a devotee. Right? Okay. Yeah, because otherwise, other than the devotee, who could do this? The demigods have already applauded him because they can understand they couldn't do this. So they see his good qualities, they're appreciated. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah.
Okay. A pure devotee is never deviated from the service of the Lord, despite all difficulties and impediments offered by the illusory energy. Right? So it doesn't mean that the plan has to be adjusted and this and that. That going on. But his focus on Krishna, his devotion to Krishna, that's never deviated. Right? Generally, men who have wealth and opulence are famous, but Bali Maharaj became famous for all time by being deprived of all his possessions. This is the special mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead towards his devotees, right? He's not famous for having taken over the heavenly planets. So he's famous for losing everything, right? Yeah, so that's the... Because who's famous for that, right? They lose everything and then they feel very bad and no one wants to be in that. But he's lost everything and he's in a more elevated position than anyone. That's why he's famous.
It's actually interesting because the reflection here is that even if you're famous for losing everything, you're famous not in a positive way.
Yes, you know, yes, not a positive way. Yes, but here it's positive. Yes. Yeah, because no one wants to be in that situation. But to be in this position of surrender to the Lord, that's then something one would want to be. This is the special mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead towards His devotees. The Lord says, Yasyaham manu grihana miharishye tad dhanam shanahi. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.88.8. As the first installment of His special favor, the Lord takes away all the possessions of His devotees. Oh, this is 88, no? Yeah, 88, that's a chapter about Shiva. And that one, so in that chapter, the whole chapter is basically about how the devotee is able to function even though everything's taken away, and how it's the special mercy of the Lord. As the first installment of His special favor, the Lord takes away all the possessions of His devotee. A devotee, however, is never disturbed by such a loss. He continues His service, and the Lord amply rewards him beyond the expectations of any common man. Right, so that happens, but because he maintains his devotion, then all facilities come. Like that. Because he's focused on the Lord, that means then everything he has can be used in the Lord's service. So that means you could have the whole universe, and you would be undisturbed, because it's all about Krishna. That's the thing, is that we're looking at being undisturbed about having, losing facility, but we also have to be undisturbed when we gain facility. That's why then what we mention is that the natural position we take to perform our service by our endeavor is just on this side of, you know, neutral. Mm-hmm. Right? We just come to that point where it's comfortable, means all the discomfiture, you know, means not all the discomfiture, but it means it's a working position. It means what where we can feel okay. That's the point we want to take. Now, whether it goes above that or below that, now how we won't be disturbed either way, that's the position we take. But then the material nature will make things above and below that. We have to become not disturbed. So devotional service will do that. So when we are, that means then that it can go more of the one way. We can have more facility, but it also means we can handle more disturbance, because they'll always be balanced. Right? The amount of wealth Yudhishthira had, no one has had, but this amount he lost also, who's lost that, you know, except for Balimar. Basically, you know, other than Balimar and Yudhishthira, it's kind of like they lost the most. And both of them were equipoised. Lord Vamanadeva said, O king of the demons, you have promised to give me 3 steps of land, but I have occupied the entire universe with 2 steps. Now think about where I should put my 3rd. As far as the sun and moon shine with the stars, and as far as the clouds pour rain, all the land throughout the universe is in your possession. Of these possessions, with 1 step, I have occupied Bhurloka. And with my upper body, I have occupied the entire sky in all directions. Right? So he just took the whole earth with the 1st step. But the whole Bhurloka, not just where they're standing. That's why the big universal form. Then he takes the 1st step and does the whole Bhumandala. Like that. Then the 2nd step, then he goes up to, you know, past Brahmaloka and pierces the universe. So that means there's nothing left, all the directions. And in your presence, with my 2nd step, I have occupied the upper planetary systems. Because you have been unable to give charity according to your promise, the rule is that you should go down to live in the hellish planets. Therefore, in accordance with the order of Sukracharya, your spiritual master, now go down and live there. Right? Cause so he, even here, Vamanadeva is referring to Sukracharya, because he cursed him that he would lose. So then, according to that, then you should go back to where you were. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 32. It is said, devotees solely engaged in devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.17.28. A devotee engaged in the service of Narayana is always in equilibrium. A devotee actually lives transcendentally. Although he may appear to have gone to hell or heaven, he does not live in either place. Rather, he always lives in Vaikuntha. Sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Bhagavad Gita 14:26. Vamanadeva asked Balimars to go to the hellish planets, apparently just to show the entire universe how tolerant he was. And Balimars did not hesitate to carry out the order. A devotee does not live alone. Of course, everyone lives with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but because the devotee is engaged in his service, he actually does not live in any material condition. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, because if you're living with the Lord, where does the Lord live? Does he live in the material world? No, he always lives in Vaikuntha. So therefore, if the devotee is living with the Lord, he's always living in Vaikuntha. So therefore, it doesn't matter to him, as it doesn't matter to the Lord, where the material situation is. You see what's happening here is that we've been dealing with the concept of the material world, the living entity, the Lord, what is the concept of spiritual life. Then devotees practicing in that in various degrees of devotional service, right? Mixed devotional service, coming up to the point where we see someone is able to perform that devotional service, you know, without being, you know, freed from all distraction. So they can function on the transcendental platform. But we're still viewing it from the secondary point. Then, with Prahlad Maharaj, then we're introducing the point of pure devotional service, so it's not about the secondary. It's about Krishna. Right? Now here, we see we're switching it and we're looking at it from the primary point of position. So the secondary just comes along with it. We see what's happening here? That whole progression, how Bhagavatam is taking us. But because the devotee is engaged in his service, he actually does not live in any material condition. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Kita janma hao jata tuya dasa. Thus he prays to take birth as an insignificant insect in the association of devotees. Because devotees are engaged in the service of the Lord, anyone who lives with them also lives in Vaikuntha. Right? So if you're living in Vaikuntha, why would the external bother you? That's that. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments on the same verse. What should I do if I cannot fill my promise? You should live in hell. Oh, he didn't put the... Who's speaking? Okay, so Balimar is saying, what should I do? Then Vamadeva, you should live in hell. The Lord now speaks to show to the world the steadiness and pure devotion of Bali. Niraye means in hell. This is approved by your guru. You can ask your learned guru whether what I say now is reasonable or not. Actually, since even a person with bhakti abhasa should not go to hell, just for breaking your promise, you also cannot go to hell. Niraye can also mean nilaye, or ri and luri can be interchanged. Thus, please go and live in my abode, Vaikuntha, Nilaye. Though now I am ordering you to enter my special place, Sutala, supplied by me. After your position there is finished, I will have you enter Vaikuntha. Though you disregard your guru, because you know he is opposed to me, I understand that he has lost his discrimination out of great affection for you. He is also dear to me, therefore go with him to Sutala. Right? So even though we look at it, how to reconcile Sukracharya, even though he's speaking against the Lord, he is very much in favor of Bali Maharaj. He is speaking that way for Bali Maharaj's favor. And then what does that mean? Bali Maharaj being a devotee, therefore now Sukracharya becomes dear to the Lord also because he's attached to his devotee. No, that's not, maybe not the reason that... Sukracharya is attached to him, but still you get that benefit. Krishna doesn't make those distinctions.
Some people have a great problem with this Sukracharya being just promoted by this.
Yes, but what to do? It's just like, let's say, the person becomes a devotee and their parents are attached to them. Though they don't see the devotional side or anything, but because they're attached to a devotee, they'll get benefit. Krishna just sees they're attached to a devotee. So that's the whole thing here. So he'll get the benefit. So he'll also go to this place. So even though So he says that even someone on Bhakti Abhas, which means you're not even on pure devotion, then they don't see hell. So then why would Bali Maharaj, who's on the platform of pure devotion? Therefore, he'll go down to the lower regions that are for the hellish planets. But Vamanadeva has made Sutala like the heavenly planets. And so because of that nice facility, and because Sukracharya is also attached to him in that way, then Sukracharya will also share in living there. So, yeah, so then it works out for everybody. Okay. Yeah, and so now he's saying, you can ask your guru, is this reasonable what I'm saying? And he'll have to agree, because it is according to Shastra. It's not necessarily how he would have looked at it, but, you know, like that.
You're a learned guru.
Yes. Okay. You had some?
I was just thinking, it's really nice how we see here the Lord's perfect way of bringing balance in all situations.
Yes, that's the whole point, is that when you connect things to Krishna, see, it means so many things are incongruous within another, but everything comes from Krishna. So then if you have Krishna, you have that perfect balance. So only someone who's Krishna conscious can actually have a perfect balance. Someone according to karma can have a balance here, a balance there, and be successful. But to be on all things, then only someone who's Krishna conscious can do that. Right, you see, it's like, I think it was, we had discussed before, is that there was some talk show that that Prabhupada was invited to. And this talk show, the man was very famous for having people on the show, and then finding fault in them, and then really ripping them to shreds. And you know how people, you know, it's like watching gladiators or Christians being ripped apart by lions, you know, something. You know, it's just that people appreciate that. So he invited Prabhupada on the show, and he felt, because he knew that, you know, he'll do his background, you know, so he knows how to catch them, that, you know, Prabhupada's talking about modern society and the Western society and how bad it is and this and that, so he thought he'd get him on that. And so then he asked, what do you think of this, you know, America or something like that? He says, oh, it's a very nice place, because, see, I have so many nice students, and they behave so well, so that means their parents must be nice. So good students means good parents. And so therefore I like the place, because there's so many, you know, nicely behaved people. The guy didn't know what to say, because his whole premise for the whole, I think it was a 1 hour program, you know, so it wasn't a short one. And so then he didn't know what to do, so could you tell us something about what you do? And so the whole rest of the program, just Prabhupada spoke nice. But now in here, Prabhupada didn't, ha, I got you or anything. He just very pleasantly went on. So he balanced the one thing of the thing, and also then was the gracious, you know, person on the other. And so then the person just went along and just, you know, oh, well, this, and saying nice things and speaking in such a way that this man would be appreciative. And so that's the whole point, is Krishna. If one has Krishna, one can balance all these things. Because otherwise we have the tendency, is, you know, when we're right, ha, I told you so, we have to, you know, no, but Prabhupada wouldn't do that. Right? He wouldn't get, you know, affected by it. He would, you know, in either way, you know, that I'm being attacked, or now I have the upper hand, or he's always be balanced. So that's Krishna consciousness. So Lord Vamanadeva continued, far from being elevated to the heavenly planets or fulfilling one's desire, one who does not properly give a beggar what he has promised falls down to a hellish condition of life. Right? Because people give in charity for elevation of the heavenly planets or fulfilling a desire. So he's saying far from that, then they fall down to a hellish condition if they can't properly give the beggar what has been promised. Right? So that's why, according to the position, only promise one what they deserve and what you can give. Like that. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments. The meaning is clear. However, seeing the results of the Lord's words later, this verse has another meaning. Lord Vamanadeva said, since you are my devotee, your desire to take the position of Indra is useless, since Svarga falls much below Vaikuntha. Though now you will be situated in Sutala, you are more elevated I guess then that being in Swarga. Since the pleasure of Sutala is not available in Swarga, you will especially and excellently attain me, the possessor of all four Purusharthas, by completely giving what you promised since you offered everything, body and soul, to me. This means that you will attain me as your doorkeeper because of your complete surrender. So he's saying this is the other meaning to what he's just said now. But otherwise, what he's saying directly has that direct meaning. It applies like that always. But the Lord, because of the devotion, and it was for pleasing him, it has these other elements along with it. Lord Vamanadeva concluded, being falsely proud of your possessions, you promised to give me land, but you could not fulfill your promise, right? Because he thought, I have the whole universe. How much land can this guy, you know? We're talking about, yeah, you know, 3 feet of land. You know, it's like, you know. Therefore, because your promise was false, you must live for a few years in hellish life. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 34. The false prestige of thinking I am very rich and I possess much vast property is another side of material life. Right? So Vamanadeva felt this is not proper for Balimars because he's a devotee. So this whole prestige of being in the heavenly planets and Indra's place, that's not for him because he's an advanced devotee. It's for Indra because, you know, he's impressed with these things. But for Balimars, then it's not important. So that's why he took him away from that situation. Right? And then the person who will flourish in that situation is put. But then Sutala is better than what is in, like, in the heavenly planets. Right? Yes?
I'm thinking it's a nice example of devotee fully surrenders to the Lord, and then the Lord, in reciprocation, gives himself to the devotee.
Yes, yes, yes. Because that's the, you can't get better than that, right? Like that. Because it's like, let us say, okay, you see a picture of Mother Jashoda and Krishna. It's not about the surrounding. Or Radha and Krishna, it's not about the surroundings. Right? Because he's given himself. There's nothing better than that. Right? But when you think of heavenly planet, it's about the surroundings. It's not about the relationship. Indra, who does he have a relationship with? Do we ever hear? It means he has his wife. Okay, but other than that, you don't hear of anything. It's not about relationship. You know, being rich and famous, who do you have a relationship with? Right? Every place you go, you have to hide. You know, you have to have dark windows. You have to have security. You have to, all these kind of things. So who do you have a relationship with? You know, so then when we talk about, okay, these people and their big parties, you know, big socialite parties, it's actually one of the few places where they can relax. Because the security is outside. They go into the room, instead of a security being right next to them, they're with people who they can interact with because they don't have to worry they're trying to get something from them, but not necessarily, but they probably are. But whatever, it's more on an equal level. So it's one of the few places they can relax. So we're thinking, oh, they're really enjoying themselves. They're actually just, you know, just they can take a breath and just relax. So it's not actually a positive thing. It's just it gets rid of the negative. You know, we're thinking, oh, wow, they're really enjoying when they're not. There's just, they can just relax. So that's the thing. It's all these things. Here, we put it on secondary. But actually, the primary is the real point. Yeah. Yes?
He's also expanding on the point that we see Balimaraj, he's a king. Even though he's a demon king, he reacts, whereas Duryodhana is a king, and in the same situation, when he's asked for land, he doesn't give it.
Yes. Like that. Yeah.
really,
yeah, and it's even less than Vamanadeva asked for, right? You know, we're talking about the, you know, head of a pin. Right? You know, so. Yes, yes, like that. Gita is also doing that. When it says setting the scene, we're thinking it's just giving a background, but it's setting the scene of this, what you just said. That in the same situation, how Arjuna's behaving and how, you know, the devotee, and how Duryodhana is behaving as the non-devotee. He's totally politicking and everything to try to make everything. And Krishna, Arjuna is worried about his enemies. Like that. So that's that, you see, yes. And this is a more extreme case of that same thing, yes. Everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and no one else possesses anything. This is the real fact. Bali Maharaj was undoubtedly the most exalted devotee, whereas previously he had maintained a misunderstanding due to false prestige. Right, so we can see as before he was affected by these material qualities, though he was a devotee. But now he's given that up, and all that's been. By the supreme will of the Lord, he now had to go to the hellish planets. But because he went there by the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he lived there more opulently than one could expect to live in the planets of heaven. A devotee always lives with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, engaging in his service. And therefore he is always transcendental to hellish or heavenly residences. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, Bali Maharaj asks, then what will happen? Lord Vamanadeva replies, please listen. There is another meaning to the verse. You are more respected by people than Indra because you have attained me especially. Therefore I give this result. Enjoy for some years the pleasures of Sutala, the abode whose result is the highest truth, since it is given by me. Then during the 8th Manvantara, I will put you in the post of Indra, and after that, take you to my abode, Vaikuntha. Right, so, it's all working out. So, even better than the common man can want. That's what he's saying. Just what people can imagine, what would be, it's way beyond even that. Conclusion. A pure devotee has never deviated from the service of the Lord despite all difficulties and impediments offered by the illusory energy, right? Because the non-deviation is on the primary platform, on consciousness, and the difficulties and impediments offered by the illusory energy are on the secondary platform. So he comes to be transcendental. He's not affected. Because a devotee engaged in the service of Lord Narayana is always in equilibrium, because it's about the Lord. The Lord is balanced. He's balanced because of that association. Vamanadeva asked Bali to go to the hellish planets, and Bali Maharaj did not hesitate to carry out the order. So this is the example. A devotee actually lives transcendentally, although he may appear to have gone to hell or heaven. He does not live in either place. Rather, he always lives in Vaikuntha. A devotee does not live alone. Of course, everyone lives with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but because the devotee is engaged in his service, he actually does not live in any material condition. Right? You're always absorbed. Lord, you're always with the Lord. You're never in a material condition. So this is the Upanaya. So this brings us close to understanding about how the devotee is never affected, because he's always with the Lord. Right? Thus, he prays to take birth as an insignificant insect in the association of devotees, because devotees are engaged in the service of the Lord. Anyone who lives with them also lives in Vaikuntha. So the devotee just wants to be with the devotees, as we see Prahlad Maharaj. Then he points out that having come in contact with Nrisimhadeva himself, the only benediction he wants is the service of his spiritual master who allowed that to happen. Right? So by the grace of the spiritual master, he got the Supreme Lord. Therefore, that's all he wants. So even if it means just being an insect, and we consider, oh, I'm not qualified to associate, but even being an insect in the association of devotees, then you're living in Vaikuntha. Okay, chapter 22. Bali Maharaj surrenders his life. Pratigya. Whether he cheats or rewards, God is always good. Because the so-called punishment by the Supreme Personality of Godhead is only his favor to correct his devotee and bring him to the right path. Bali Maharaj was indeed a fully surrendered devotee, but even some demons who are not at all devotees but merely enemies of the Lord attain the same exalted position achieved by many mystic yogis. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is fully independent. He may take away one's opulence, or he may not. Material opulence is sometimes dangerous because it diverts one's attentions to false prestige, right? So he may take it and may not. If it's not dangerous, you don't need to take it away. But if it is dangerous, you take it away. Like you see a knife and you see the small child, you take the knife away. But you have somebody who's bigger and they're using the knife properly, then you don't need to take it away. To protect a devotee from such a misunderstanding, the Lord, showing special mercy, sometimes takes away his material possessions. Right? So misunderstanding means we don't see it in relation to the Lord. That's the misunderstanding. So it's not that the opulence is the problem. We think, we're devoted, they shouldn't have, or this and that. It's not about that. It's about understanding. We take it purely by the secondary, that, it's the thing itself is what's bad. No, it's the misunderstanding that can come from it. That's what's bad. When in spite of possessing all these opulences, a person is not proud, this means that he is fully aware that all his opulences are due to the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hence, the Supreme Personality of Godhead never takes away material opulences achieved because of devotional service. Although he sometimes takes away opulences achieved by pious activities. Right, you perform your duties, whatever comes by that, that's there. But what's achieved by that devotional attitude, that doesn't have to be taken away because it's been gained by devotion, it's maintained by devotion. Although he sometimes takes away opulences achieved by pious activities, he does this to make a devotee prideless or put him in a better position in devotional service. Adhyaya Prakashika. The summary of this chapter is as follows. The Supreme Personality of Godhead was pleased by the behavior of Balimarsh. Thus the Lord placed him on the planet Sutala. And there, after bestowing benedictions upon him, the Lord agreed to become his doorman. Balimarsh was extremely truthful. Being unable to keep his promise, he was very much afraid, for he knew that one who has deviated from truthfulness is insignificant in the eyes of society. An exalted person can suffer the consequences of hellish life, but he is very much afraid of being defamed for deviation from the truth. Right? Being defamed, it happens by the course of the material nature, that you don't worry about, but being defamed because of something, being a lack of truthfulness, then that's a problem. Balimarsh agreed with great pleasure to accept the punishment awarded to him by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Balimarsh's dynasty, there was, because then I've done wrong here, so therefore he agrees to accept the punishment. In Balimarsh's dynasty, there were many asuras who, because of their enmity towards Vishnu, had achieved a destination more exalted than that of many mystic yogis. Balimarsh specifically remembered the determination of Prahlad Maharaj in devotional service. Considering all these points, he decided to give his head in charity as the place for Vishnu's third step. Balimarsh also considered how great personalities give up their family relationships and material possessions to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Indeed, they sometimes even sacrifice their lives for the satisfaction of the Lord, just to become his personal servants. Accordingly, by following in the footsteps of previous acharyas and devotees, Balimarsh perceived himself successfully. While Balimarsh, having been arrested by the ropes of Varuna, was offering prayers to the Lord, his grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj, appeared there and described how the Supreme Personality of Godhead had delivered Balimarsh by taking his possessions in a tricky way. While Prahlad Maharaj was present, Lord Brahma and Bali's wife, Vindhyavali, described the supremacy of the Supreme Lord. Since Balimarsh had given everything to the Lord, they prayed for his release. The Lord then described how a non-devotee's possession of wealth is a danger, whereas a devotee's opulence is a benediction from the Lord. Then, being pleased with Balimarsh, the Supreme Lord offered his disc to protect Balimarsh and promised to remain with him. Shloka Anusharanam, verses 1 to 11. Balimarsh praises Vamanadeva. Verses 12 to 23. Prahlad Maharaj, Vindhyavali, and Lord Brahma praise the Lord. 24 to 36. The merciful Lord gives benedictions to Balimarsh. So even this element of praise the Lord, that's even also as Vedic, right? Okay, 1 to 11. Balimarsh praises Vamanadeva. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, O King, although the Supreme Personality of Godhead was superficially seen to have acted mischievously towards Balimarsh, Balimarsh was fixed in his determination. Considering himself not to have fulfilled his promise, he spoke as follows. Balimarsh said, O best personality of Godhead, most worshipable for all the demigods, if you think that my promise has become false, I shall certainly rectify matters to make it truthful. I cannot allow my promise to be false. Please, therefore, place your third lotus footstep on my head. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, Bali addressed the Lord in a joking way, addressing him as Uttama Shloka. Bali Maharaj said, after begging as a dwarf for three steps of land, you then attempted to take land by three steps as the gigantic form of Trivikrama. In this way, you reveal your lack of desire as a brahmachari without greed. We devotees become mad with bliss on drinking this nectar of your fame. Though you are the husband of Lakshmi, you beg land from a beggar like me. You act disgracefully by desiring more land by trick, cheating brahmanas in the guise of a brahmachari, showing desire for material objects, exhibiting lack of peace, showing anger and punishment to the person who gives. You show these as your natural qualities. You destroy the intelligence of my guru who had knowledge of scriptures. You sided with Indra and others who were barely touched with the drop of your mercy, and you sided against me who became submerged in the great ocean of your sweet mercy. The poets thus glorify you as famous. Right? So he gives all these contradictory things. He does all these things just to bring out the taste of the relationship between the Lord and the devotee. Like that. Because otherwise then... Yeah. So you see with Krishna all these different contradictions and all those come up. Yeah? Like that. So it's like... If you consider my words false... Oh, he's continuing. Oh. If you consider my words false, means that actually it would be impossible for you who desire to conquer unjustly your devotee to make the words of your devotee false. O Lord, worship by the devatas. This means that you have been requested by the devatas to take the land from me and give it to them for their enjoyment. I will make my promise true. My words should not be cheating. Your words, however, cheat the devatas, since you offer to them artha, dharma, and kama, and not the nectar of your lotus feet. When they praise you, put your third step on my head. Do not think that since you have covered the universe by two steps, there is no use in putting your foot on my head. This act will be greater than the wealth gained from your two steps, since your taking possession of the owner of the wealth is greater than taking possession of the wealth. Right? That's the important part, is that who owns the... I mean, because you took all this wealth, but still there's the owner of the wealth. That's still something separate. Bali Maharaj continued, I do not fear being deprived of all my possessions, because he has that wealth means he can generate that wealth. So having the person who can generate that wealth is actually greater wealth than having the wealth itself. Yes?
Women work on this principle too. Possessing the man.
Oh, you catch the men, you get everything. Especially in California. Yes, because the point is the personal aspects is higher than the secondary. That's also the point to be made here. So that personal aspect brings out that point. But yes, you get the person, you get that. Bali Maharaj continued, I do not fear being deprived of all my possessions, living in hellish life, being arrested for poverty by the ropes of Varuna, or being punished by you as much as I fear defamation. Right? So he's being arrested for poverty because he said he would give more and he doesn't have more. So therefore, how's that going to be? So there must be punishment. Right? Although a father, mother, brother, a friend may sometimes punish one as a well-wisher, they never punish their subordinate like this. But because you are the most worshipable Lord, I regard the punishment you have given me as most exalted. Right, so they don't come, take everything, get what they want, and then punish. Right? So he's saying, he's here, what is it? Mother, father, brother, a friend, like that. They may punish as a well-wisher, but never like this. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 4. Punishment meted out by the Supreme Personality of Godhead is accepted by the devotee as the greatest mercy. One who seeks your compassion and thus tolerates all kinds of adverse conditions due to the karma of his past deeds, who engages always in your devotional service with his body, with his mind, words, and body, and who always offers obeisances to you, is certainly a bona fide candidate for liberation. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.8. A devotee knows that that so-called punishment by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Well, Prabhupada did 2.14. Says that this is from... Oh, no, he's just... This is in this purport, and he's quoting that. Okay, yeah. Devotee knows that so-called punishment by the Supreme Personality of Godhead is only his favor to correct his devotee and bring him to the right path. Therefore, the punishment awarded by the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be compared to even the greatest benefit awarded by one's material mother, father, brother, or friend. Footnote 8. This important human body is obtained by the grace of the Father, and therefore everyone is indebted to the Father. Of course, in other lives, one who gets a father and mother, even cats and dogs have fathers and mothers. But in the human form of life, the father and mother can award their son the greatest benediction by teaching him to become a devotee. When one becomes a devotee, he achieves the greatest benediction because he completely averts the repetition of birth and death. Therefore, the father who trains his child in Krishna consciousness is the most benevolent father in the world. It is said, Janame Janame Shabhe Pita Mata Pai Krishna Guru Nahi Mile Bhaja Hari Hari Ai. Everyone gets a father and mother, but if one gets the benediction of Krishna and Guru, he can conquer material nature and return home back to Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam 9.18.43 purport. Okay, so they may not give that kind of punishment, but they also can't give this kind of benediction, right? So even though the punishment given out was much greater than anyone would give for such a situation, right? But the benediction that will be given by being able to function in this situation then is much greater than anybody else can give also. Bali Maharaj continued, since your lordship is indirectly the greatest well-wisher of us demons, you act for our best welfare by posing as if our enemy. Because demons like us always aspire for a position of false prestige. By chastising us, you give us the eyes by which to see the right path. Srila Prabhupada comments, Bali Maharaj considered the Supreme Personality of Godhead a better friend to the demons than to the demigods. Right? Because the demigods, they're puffed up with their position, and Krishna leaves that, unless they get out of hand and don't manage the universe properly. But for the demons, they try to get puffed up, and they're always chastised. So actually, Krishna is the more better well-wisher to the demons than to the demigods, by that perspective, right? In the material world, the more one gets material possessions, the more he becomes blind to spiritual life. The demigods are devotees of the Lord for the sake of material possessions. But although demons apparently do not have the Supreme Personality of Godhead on their side, he always acts as their well-wisher by depriving them of their positions of false prestige. So, as far as devotional service goes, the demons are actually getting a better position than the demigods. Because the demigods, they're worshipping the Lord, like turning to the Lord for everything, but they're worshipping basically on that material platform. Right? So then by the demons not being able to get like that, then actually the Lord's better for them if they take up devotional service. Problem is most demons aren't interested in devotional service.
Krishna says in the Gita that those who are atheistic, it costs them down to lower species of life. So how do we see that in context with this, that is actually being merciful?
You have to be able to separate what is the perspective. Perspective is according to what work you do, that result you get. So on the material platform, everything is just. So because of following the piety, you get a good result. By being impious, you get a bad result. Right? So here, atheist means who are not acknowledging the position of the Supreme Lord. So the demons that do acknowledge his position, but may not care about that, but at least they acknowledge it and respect that, they'll do better than demons who don't. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like that. But what he's pointing out here is that because the Lord chastising the devotees, that's his mercy. So you're looking at it from the devotional point. They're actually in a better position, though they can't take advantage of it. Like that. Balimars continued, many demons who were continuously inimical towards you finally achieved the perfection of great mystic yogis. Your lordship can perform one work to serve many purposes. And consequently, although you have punished me in many ways, I do not feel ashamed of having been arrested by the ropes of Varuna. Nor do I feel aggrieved, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes. What to speak of me, your dedicated devotee, even the demons who hated you got your extraordinary mercy. I have been punished by you, the benefactor, whose actions have great effects. I have a little shame because of my impurity of heart. Right, so not the act, what happened. It's due to his impurity in heart. Right, he was proud before of his wealth, this and that. So therefore, the Lord had to come and perform this pastime. You know, so that for that he may feel a little bit something. Bali Maharaj continued, my grandfather Prahlad Maharaj is famous, being recognized by all your devotees. Although harassed in many ways by his father, Hiranyakashipu, he still remained faithful, taking shelter at your lotus feet. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments. Bali Maharaj said, I should tolerate the punishment you give, since you are my deity, but you should also be affectionate to me, since you should think of me as the grandson of your devotee Prahlad. Though he received many types of torture from his father, he remained surrendered to you. So then, in that way, just means because of his connection to Prahlad Maharaj, then he's saying, you know, may you be kind to me. Because you're kind always to him, so I'm connected to him, so in that way be kind to me. But that kindness means that remembrance of the Lord, because that's the whole point. He always remains surrendered, so that's the kindness he's looking for. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur points out that in the following two verses, 9 and 10, Bali Maharaj answers the question, why did Prahlad ignore his father and surrender to the Lord? Bali Maharaj continued, what is the use of the material body which automatically leaves its owner at the end of life? And what is the use of all one's family members who are actually plunderers taking away money that is useful for the service of the Lord in spiritual opulence? What is the use of a wife? She is only the source of increasing material conditions. And what is the use of family, home, country, and community? Attachment for them merely wastes the valuable energy of one's lifetime. Right? So if all these things aren't connected to the Lord, this is what they're doing. They're just distracting from. Right? Like that. Srila Prabhupada comments, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, advises sarva dharmam parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. Give up all other varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. The common man does not appreciate such a statement by the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he thinks that during his lifetime, his family, society, country, body, and relatives are everything, right? So these are all varieties of religion, right? Because family has a nature, right? And you have to deal with the family in a certain way. By dealing according to the laws of religion, then you get the benefit. Right? Society, then it has even other elements to it. Like that. Country, then it has another nature. The body, the relatives, you know, all the possessions. All these different things have their own nature. Right? So they have their own religion. So someone pious is practicing all these things and getting the material benefit, but one should give that up to just please the Supreme Lord. Does that make sense? So then one can engage these in pleasing the Supreme Lord, but it's about pleasing the Supreme Lord with the situations you're in, right? So now one is, let's say, a householder, and that, so therefore he already has a family, he's therefore in a particular society, in a particular country, he has a particular body, therefore there's particular relatives, and therefore from his endeavors in that environment, there's certain possessions. So now that he surrenders everything to Krishna, instead of those things being for his own benefit, now they're for Krishna, right? Does that make sense? So surrendering everything doesn't mean that those things are lost. It just means surrendering everything means now you're engaging for the Lord, not for yourself. Looking around for his friend. Okay. Okay.
So, Maharaj. Like a devotee, like Prada and Bali Maharaj.
Yes.
So they are in the family of demon family.
They're in the
family of demon.
Families of demons.
Yeah, and so they externally they behave like a demon, but internally they are devoted.
Right.
How can they adjust such situation?
Sir, how do you adjust having a toilet in the kitchen? Shall we move on? The point is he's the king. He's taking care of his citizens. So like any king, he just happens to be the king of the demons. So he takes care of them. Right? And they do their demon stuff, and that's what they do. That's their lifestyle. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but how could a devotee act like a...
He's not... How is he acting like a demon? Is he opposing Vishnu? What we have to understand is these demons, they follow all the rules and regulations that are there in the Vedic literature. Otherwise, how are they so powerful? How can you take over Indra's place and be there if you're not pious? It's just their piety is not in connection with the Lord. His may be, but all of his followers, it's not. You understand? He told his followers, too, that don't fight with Vishnu, now go down to the lower planets. They did that. So what does that mean? They follow authority. You understand? So demoniac is a mentality, not necessarily a lifestyle. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, like demons usually they're in the mood of ignorance, you know. That's the
Danavas. It means the ghosts and all that. The Daityas and Danavas, they're in the mode of passion. Because they're always working for their benefit. Why are they on those planets? Because as a human being, they performed activities, they were pious, but it wasn't about connection to the Lord. So they get the results of their piety, but they go down to the lower planets instead of go to the heavenly planets. Does that make sense? It means how does a devotee adjust? He has a job. He's out there with karmis all day. He's riding on the bus to go down there with the karmis. Right? But everything about what he's doing is in that environment, but he's a devotee. So from the outside, he looks exactly the same as everybody else that's there. No?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the point. Okay? Okay, why should one give up any of them and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? But from the behavior of great personalities like Pallad Maharaj and Bali Maharaj, we understand that surrendering to the Lord is the right action for the intelligent person. Pallad Maharaj took shelter of Vishnu against the will of his father. Similarly, Bali Maharaj took shelter of Vamadeva against the will of his spiritual master, Sukracharya, and all the leading demons. Right, so that surrender to the Lord, then all benefit is there. Krishna protects. Right? It always works out good for the devotee. Right? So, yeah, that's the position. So that's the thing is, all these things we're engaging for ourselves, all we're changing is we're engaging them to please Krishna. That's the meaning of Sarvadharma Parityaja. Right? It means that we're not following these religions for the benefit I'll get. We're applying these things, because where does that religion come from? It comes from Krishna. Right? What was it? Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Right? Dharma comes from Krishna. So all these dharmas, they're actually Krishna's dharmas. But we're supposed to be applying those dharmas to please Krishna. But we're applying the dharmas for the benefit we'll get. So following all these varieties of religion, we're doing that to please ourselves. Now we're acknowledging the Lord's position and then using them to please Him. So it doesn't change our situation. It changes the consciousness. Yes?
You see, this transformation from Madhyama to Uttama happens quite naturally.
Yes.
But then, in this fasting, but then with Devas, they always remain Kanishnas. So why he isn't happy?
Because they're proud of their positions and their desire for the enjoyment. So because of desire, it doesn't move forward. So desire is the key. Because for the Madhyama, then they can appreciate the higher platform, but, you know, like that. But for the neophyte, then they appreciate God's position, but not necessarily, you know, and you know, the aspect of being submissive to the Lord, but not necessarily giving up material desire like that. So that's the difference between the two, because the whole thing is desire. That's the thing in the hand of the jiva is desire. So desiring to be Krishna conscious, that's all it takes. You want pure devotion, you simply have to desire it. You want, you know, chant Shuddhanam, you have to desire it. Means with time, one will get purified, so that desire being there is something you can take advantage of. But the point is it's until you desire it, it doesn't happen. You may get, it means we don't have that, everything around will get purified, so that one's in a position where if one did desire it, one would move forward very nicely. So it's when one does desire, then that's when it happens. So desire is the key.
We can say they're just complacent.
Yes, complacent, comfortable. That's why it says getting, what do you call this? There's the term, probably says, conditioned by the mode of goodness. Yeah, things are nice, it's going well, things are successful, you get, like you said, complacent. And so that drive for more. So the purity of the mode of goodness becomes mistaken for the purity of devotion. Like that. The lifestyle is good, everything's going nice, and so you think that's the devotional, that's the pious side. Right? And as long as the ego is not great, then it won't be lost. But if the ego comes up too much, then Krishna may take it away. So they're pious enough to maintain it, but then become complacent towards the devotional. So that's your demigods. You know, because it goes well. They're in charge. They manage things. It goes properly. It goes great. So it's just a continuation of that mentality. That's why one has to be careful of that. You know, because it'll look, it's steady, it's stable, and all that. Yes, but at the same time, it's not coming to that drive in Krishna consciousness is less. So okay, end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura.